Tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? It's time to simplify. Whether you own a big business or a small startup, Empower Payments can save you money. Streamline your payment process while saving money today with Empower Payments. Learn more at empowerpayments.com. That's empowerpayments.com.
Move over, boys. It's time for She's on the Mic with Bethany Bowman on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome into this week's episode of She's on the Mic. I'm your host, Bethany Bowman. We're going to start off with some baseball today. So excited to be joined by Hannah Wing. Hannah is the digital host and reporter for the Texas Rangers, who, of course, come off of a big win last night and Game 7. Hannah, the Rangers are heading to the World Series. How excited are you? And thanks for joining us.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me, Bethany. I'm so excited. I landed back in Dallas at 3 a.m. this morning. There's so much excitement after the game. The clubhouse celebrations just keep getting more and more exciting, and it was just such a special win, especially with the Rangers and Astros rivalry that's been going back and forth for so many years, and it just made it even that much sweeter having it happen at Minute Maid Park, and just overall so proud of this team and organization as a whole, and truly just can't believe it, but also can't. It's kind of fully processing now.
Absolutely. And the Rangers are one of six franchises that actually don't have a World Series win. So, not looking too far ahead, of course, you're probably just wanting to enjoy this moment, as are the guys and everybody involved in the organization. But, I mean, looking forward, like, what makes this team special?
You know what? That's such a great question. And I've actually asked our players that a lot this season. And it seems like the sentiment across the entire clubhouse is just how special this group is. And I've been a part of this organization for 5 seasons, and I can feel that sentiment, too, just with how close the guys have become this season. I interviewed Travis Jankowski a few months back, and he was explaining to me that, you know, on road trips, they'll have 24 guys out to dinner, and that's just unheard of. Usually you'll have 3 or 4. So
yeah.
It just seems like this team overall is really close. They have great camaraderie. They really just feel like a family and are super close, and it's just a really, really tight-knit and fun group, and I think that ultimately led to the win last night. I forget who it was, but someone said that the team that has the most fun is the team that's going to win the World Series. And obviously, you know, we don't know who we're going to be playing next or what the next couple of days will look like, but it's going to be so much fun. And it just seems like this group is so special and that camaraderie is unlike anything else.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, we don't know who the Rangers are taking on next. It'll be either the Diamondbacks or the Phillies, who also go to a Game 7. That will be tonight, right after, actually, this show. So the World Series begins on Friday, October 27th, though, this Friday, and Game 1 will take place in Globe Life Field in Arlington. I've heard that it's already, like, standing room only, and it's going to be a huge home field advantage for the Rangers. Like, how excited are you to see all the support, and how has that been this season for the Texas Rangers?
You know what? It's been awesome. Like I said, I've been a part of this organization for 5 seasons, starting off at Globe Life Field, making the move over. Sorry, starting at Globe Life Park, rather. It's a little confusing there, the same name.
Yeah.
But now over at Globe Life Field, and I think our biggest goal for this season was to bring meaningful baseball to the new ballpark. I mean, our fan base has been through so much. They're so supportive, whether they're coming out to games or on social media. Like, we are lucky to have the most amazing fans in baseball. And so we're really excited to have them out to the game on Friday, especially having that home field advantage for Game 1. That's going to be huge for us. And it's just so cool seeing the difference between a regular Rangers game during, like, the normal season, and then now how that just elevates so much more. And even last night, I mean, I was down on the field post game, and I looked out at Minute Maid, and I saw how many fans drove down for Game 7. They stayed till the end. They were chanting all the players' names as they walked into the dugout on their way to the clubhouse for the celebrations. And I mean, I just have chills remembering it and thinking about it. So we're really excited to bring postseason baseball, especially World Series baseball, to Globe Life Field this season. And just can't wait for our fans to experience it and be a part of it, because it has been since 2011.
Yeah. One player that had a huge series here in this this first postseason series, Adolis Garcia. He is the ALCS MVP after going 10 for 28. That's hitting .357 with 5 home runs, an absurd 15 RBI in those 7 games. And of course, this was an emotional series for him. You know, some extra factors kind of, adding to it. He was hit by a pitch. There was that whole thing. But that's a guy that just looks like a true competitor to me.
Absolutely. And I know the other day we hit that grand slam, that meant the world to him. And just again, just the stage being set the way that it was, the energy and the passion that he's always played with, not even just in the postseason. Just really exciting for him, and glad that the fruits of his labor are paying dividends, obviously. And I always love watching him come up to bat because you never know what he's going to do. And it's just so exciting for him, and I'm so proud of him and just everything that he's overcome. And, you know, from being an all-star this season to now the ALCS MVP, I mean, he's just crushing it, and such a fun and passionate player on the field, but also such a nice guy off of it as well.
That's awesome. That's good to hear. Those 15 RBI are also an all-time single series playoff record. The previous was 13. It was held by a Ranger as well, designated hitter Nelson Cruz in the 2011 ALCS. But no series in playoff history had ever seen a player record 14 RBIs until Garcia did it. He got there with the 2-RBI single in Game 7, and now he sits at 15. So pretty exciting to see history being made by him as well.
Yes, a lot of history has been made. We have that. Evan Carter, who's only 21 years old, has reached base safely in 12 consecutive games. I mean, everyone, it just seems like things are firing on all cylinders. Corey Seager was due. He had a big home run last night. A lot of passion and emotion behind that one as well, and just really got the guys fired up in the dugout. So I think just across the board, this team's really clicking offensively. The pitching looks great, too. So I think last night was a huge game for us, and this team seems to really ride momentum really well. And after, you know, the big Game 6 win in Houston, I had a feeling that last night was going to end up with the Rangers on top and heading to a World Series. So it's just really fun to watch this team and the history that's been made along the way.
Now, with the Rangers advancing to the World Series, that, of course, means at least 4 more games and possibly 7. It seems like we'll also see him make some more history. The current leaderboard for RBI in a single postseason, David Freese, 2011 Cardinals, sits at 21 RBI. Garcia with the Rangers this season, and also Corey Seager with the Dodgers in 2020 at 20 RBI. So, I mean, both of those guys right there in this season, they're sitting second and could go on to break that record. That's pretty cool.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, our offense this season has been off the charts, especially with how things started off this season. I mean, I felt like we were scoring at least 10 runs a game, and the fact that we had 11 last night off of Houston and their pitching staff was huge for us.
And then the pitching, too, you know, it's kind of interesting. I was watching the game, and throughout the regular season, I feel like we see a lot of guys go, you know, really deep as far as innings into the game. Nobody pitched more than 2.2 innings last night. Max Scherzer actually did that. And we saw for the Astros, you know, Javier had a pretty tough outing, got pulled really early. Mm-hmm. Just kind of goes to show that in postseason baseball, it's really tough to be somebody out there on the mound.
Yeah, and I knew that that was going to happen last night, and I was joking with my friends before. I was like, I feel like this game is going to be a long one just because we're going to have so many pitching changes, and we didn't know if it was going to be, you know, each pitcher got an inning or how that was going to work. But, yeah, I mean, Bruce Bochy going into last night's game just said all along, you know, all hands are going to be on deck. Obviously, Evaldi will be off the table, and I believe Houston said that Verlander would be too, just with his age and kind of where he's at. But, I mean, both pitching staffs are just phenomenal, and it was definitely all hands on deck on both sides last night, and lots of pitching changes and things happening. And, you know, kudos to our guys as well for, I mean, we just have such a versatile pitching staff with, you know, several guys starting this season and then getting moved to the bullpen and just coming up last night. I mean, Monty was huge for us. Jordan Montgomery has been awesome for us in the postseason. So when I saw him come out after Scherzer, it was definitely a weird, you know, like, oh, you're used to watching him start every day. Mm-hmm. What is he doing? And, you know, the middle innings. But it was really fun to watch him on the mound last night, coming after Scherzer, and just kudos to all of our pitching staff last night for their contributions. And it was really awesome to see Jose Leclerc close it out. I talked to him after the game last night, and, you know, he came up. He's a hometown talent. I mean, he was raised in this organization, was mm-hmm. drafted by this organization, and I believe he's one of maybe two players that's still on this team from when I first started 5 seasons ago. So things look a lot different now compared to the first clubhouse I walked into. But it was just really surreal for him last night to close out that game and be on the mound and be the one to get Tucker out to get the win.
Yeah, and Montgomery got the win. Like you said, used to seeing him start. That was kind of an interesting conversation I had with somebody last night while watching the game. Just kind of the fact that starters coming out of the bullpen, like, it's a whole different ball game for them. And as someone who's mm-hmm. never played baseball, obviously, I'm like, you know, why? Like, you know, you're still going out there. You're still throwing. Like, why is it different? Have you had any conversations, like, with some of your pitchers, and how coming out of the bullpen opposed to starting, if you're used to that routine, might be a little bit different?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I talked to a few of them. I think The one that I probably talked to the most would be Dane Dunning. I mean, he was nails for us this season coming out of the bullpen. And obviously with DeGrom going down, he stepped up in a big way. And he just said, you know, I want to help this team win in whatever capacity it is. And I think that, especially with Martin Perez as well, getting moved to the bullpen as well, and, you know, Andrew Heaney later on, I just think that they all really just want this team to win. And like I said earlier, this team camaraderie is something special, and people just want to come together and help the team win in whatever capacity that looks like. And, you know, I don't think anyone viewed it necessarily as a demotion to the bullpen. I think they just saw that their role was going to be revamped a little bit and be able to come out and come help, and that's all they really cared about at the end of the day. So nothing too specific, but overall just seemed like the sentiment was they just wanted to help the team win, and that's what they were there to do, and obviously got the job done.
I love your post-game interviews that the Rangers will post on their social pages. They're always chaotic. They're always hectic. But I love that. I would rather see that than,
Thank you.
Off to the side where, you know, you can probably hear a little better, but it's not the true, you know, visual and the emotion of what's going on. What is that like to be involved in all that?
You know, it's so funny you say that, because I go into every single one with a full-on plan, and then I end up getting in there and either, you know, there's just so much happening, you just kind of see what comes out of your mouth. And I obviously try and stick to the topics that I do have, but it's also so fun to set this scene for our fans that obviously can't be in there with all the beer and champagne being sprayed everywhere and Creed playing in the background. So it's just so fun to just grab guys, and there's obviously so many media members in there, and so many just celebrations happening, and especially now with our need for Creed, as we want to call it. I interviewed Jonah Heim last night, our catcher, and he's just been huge for us this season. And I was interviewing him, and there was just a chorus of Creed being sung in the background by a good majority of the team, and hopefully it's not a copyright issue, but it was just so fun being in that moment. And I love those post-game interviews. I mean, I really enjoyed chatting with the players before the games as well, kind of mentality and just overall preparation. But the post-game ones are really special, just because this team's come such a far and long way from especially where we started when I was here in 2018. And it's just been fun seeing, even with Bruce Bochy being at the helm for a season, how big of a difference that can make as well. And just so many fun celebrations, and especially, like I said, too, I keep going back to this, but just overall camaraderie makes big wins like this that much more special, and it's just so special to be a part of those moments, and I just love running in the clubhouse with all the walls taped up and champagne being sprayed everywhere, and I think my first interview in that environment was with Nathaniel Lowe, our first baseman, who I actually have a podcast with, and we have a great relationship. He's wonderful, and he's such a big part of this team and such a big leader. And I think I was screaming to the microphone because there were so many guys around him spraying him with champagne and screaming. And I mean, there's truly just nothing like it. So it's really special.
And then here's kind of an interesting question for you, Hannah. Corey Seager, of course, you know, he won a World Series with the Dodgers. He was the MVP. Have you had any conversations with him as far as maybe what he likes about the Rangers or anything that he's noticed about the Rangers? You know, it's got to be tough, obviously, leaving a place like the Dodgers and coming to a new organization, no matter who it is. But what's maybe something he's talked about that stuck out to you?
Well, I think he definitely likes sitting at Globe Life Field. I think that's why the Rangers were able to be so successful in 2020. He's mentioned that a lot. I think just overall, the winning culture, our GM, Chris Young, is just huge on that. And obviously the investments that we've made the past few off seasons with Seager and Simeon and DeGrom, and then getting Scherzer at the trade deadline. I mean, we're trying to get that star power. We definitely have. And the players that I've talked to want to come play in Texas. They see what we're building here. They see the facilities, just the coaching staff, the front office, and just the changes that we've made to get to this point. And I think that that's something that's really enticing to players like Seager, and it seems like he's fitting in really well here. It seems like the team gets along great. I think he's a big reason of that. And obviously just offensively, him at Globe Life Field and just all season has been huge for us. I mean, he obviously missed a big chunk as well with some injuries, but the fact that he was still putting up the numbers that he did while missing some games was huge for us. And it just seems like this team and this organization is the perfect fit for him.
Absolutely. You mentioned a few minutes ago that, you know, you've been with this club now five seasons, just like some differences that you've seen as it's been building. Like, what was it like five seasons ago, and why are we seeing the Rangers now where they're at? What are some of the little things that have been going on over the past few years?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, when I first started, it was at Globe Life Park. The team looked very different. I think overall, it was just the winning culture that was being established. Obviously, every team wants to win, but every team also has to go through a rebuild. And so I came in 2018. I believe 2016 was the last time the Rangers were in a postseason seat of some capacity. And so I was definitely going through the rebuild phases and kind of watching what worked, what didn't work. And I think, you know, we have really solid prospects as well, which is really exciting for us. And just, you know, some internal changes that have happened and the new ballpark and just the new energy that this organization has, especially, too, with Chris Young overseeing so much of that. And, I mean, he's one of the brightest minds in baseball, so we're very lucky to have him and what he's established. And he also credited John Daniels last night for some of the contributions that he made that helped get us to this point as well. So I just think there have been a lot of changes made, whether it's personnel, players, and just the new ballpark, too, I think just gave this franchise a clean slate. And, yes, we didn't start winning the second we started at Globe Life Field in 2021, but I think the amenities and just the clubhouse camaraderie and the organization as a whole, and, you know, people just love living and playing in Texas, and I think that's a big draw for a lot of players as well. Mm-hmm. So I think the big-time acquisitions we've had in off seasons and at trade deadlines just shows that this team wants to win, and we're getting to that point. And I think it might even be a little bit sooner than we originally anticipated, which is even more exciting.
For sure. Well, and then also I think the Rangers have to give a little credit to you, Hannah, because you come in and here you are. You're in the World Series now. So, you know, it helps to
it's crazy.
to have
it still doesn't feel real. I mean, it does, but it doesn't all at the same time.
Yeah. Well, you do a great job and you share the
stories
so well for the Rangers, and it's been an incredible season. So I'm sure it's been fun. Last thing for you. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit.
Okay.
Big game seven tonight for the Phillies and Diamondbacks. Do you have a prediction?
You know what? I don't. I was actually talking to some of the guys last night if they had a preference, and it doesn't seem like there's one way or another they're leaning towards. I think everyone's just so happy to be in this position that we don't necessarily have one. I'm biased, and I would probably say Arizona just because my family's in California, so they could easily drive out for that. But that's obviously not anything to do that's happening on the field. So either way, we're just so happy to be there. But no preference as to who we play, but I'll definitely be watching tonight and planning outfits accordingly for whatever city or state we end up in.
Okay, well, Hannah, thank you so much for joining us here today on She's on the Mic, Sports Radio 810 WHV. Really appreciate it. And, hey, maybe we'll have you back on here soon as the Rangers continue on their journey. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
That was Hannah Wing, digital reporter and host for the Texas Rangers, the World Series-bound Texas Rangers. Coming right up on She's on the Mic, we'll talk with Allie Trost-Martin for the soccer fans on Sporting Kansas City's big playoff berth. Coming up next.
You're tuned in to She's on the Mic with Bethany Bowman on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back into She's on the Mic. Excited to be joined now by Allie Trost-Martin. Allie, the voice of Sporting Kansas City and doing so much in the world of soccer. So, you know, we've had you on once before, Allie, this season. We talked some Sporting Kansas City. Now they're in the playoffs. So thanks for joining us and excited to talk with you a little bit.
Yeah, I'm so excited to be back on, and crazy, right, that they are in this position. I believe when I last came on a few weeks ago, it was very much up in the air, and I think a lot of us knew it was going to come down to the last day of the regular season, come down to decision day. Sporting Kansas City needed a win, but they also needed some help as well. And not only did they take care of business for themselves, they also got the help that they needed to not just get in to one of those final two spots, but get the 8 seed, which now gives them home field advantage for the wild card game Wednesday night against San Jose. It's incredible, especially considering the fact that this team didn't win a game for the first 10 games of the season. No team in Major League Soccer history has ever started that poorly and then made the postseason. So pretty incredible stuff. And now this team kind of playing with house money a little bit. High expectations. They want to win. I think they feel about themselves very much like with the form they've been in. This is a team that others will not want to play just because of how much momentum they're riding. But still, to make it in as an 8 seed, you know, you're the underdog a little bit. So I'm really excited to see what this Sporting Kansas City team has got. And it all starts on Wednesday.
Yeah, and like you said, we talked last time just about the poor start that Sporting had this season. Something I saw Johnny Russell say, he, of course, had 2 goals the other night in the big win. I think if you look at our form since those first 10 games, he said, we are right there with the best teams in this league. So, I mean, like you said, not great to make history, you know, on that end of things. But
right.
You know, they do so with a pretty phenomenal ending to the season. Do you agree with him? Like right now, do you think they're playing their best soccer?
100%, and it goes all the way back to the start of May. During that time span, Sporting Kansas City had been one of the best teams, if not the best team, in the Western Conference when you look at points, goals per game, and a couple of other statistical categories. They also only lost 7 games from that time on to the end of the season, which, you know, is, again, good for, if you just look at that chunk of the season, would have put Sporting pretty high up in the table. Of course, you can't eliminate how the season started when you're factoring everything in to the final points totals, but this team figured it out, and they overcame a lot. They were also dealing with a number of injuries at that time, which, as we saw, led to a lot of different players throughout the season getting minutes with this team. And to win championships, sometimes it does take the entire bench. It does take the entire group. And I think what is so unique with the Sporting Kansas City team this year is that they have truly been battle-tested. I mean, this is a team that has overcome a lot of adversity going into the playoffs. And what's maybe even more important than that is the fact that they are in such good form and that they're riding this excellent wave of momentum. We see this in American sports and in the postseason, right? Like, if a team gets hot at the right time, that can pretty much write the rest of the story. It doesn't matter mm-hmm. where you come in from a seeding standpoint. All that matters is that you're clicking at the right time. And this Sporting Kansas City team very much in an excellent run of form at the right time. And I've been covering this team now for a few years, and looking at in seasons past, you know, 2018, this team just lost a heartbreaker at home in the Western Conference Final. They either finished as the one seed or really high up in the table that year. 2020, the team finished as the one seed. They lost a heartbreaker at home in either the quarterfinals or the semifinals against Minnesota. And then 2021, the team almost finished as the one seed, ended up finishing as the third seed, but then eventually lost at home in the postseason. And so disappointing exits in those 3 seasons, when you look back over the last 5 years, very disappointing with what the expectation was of this team finishing as a higher seed. But what's so unique in Major League Soccer is that there's so much parity in the league, and the playoffs really expose that. And I think a stat that kind of just really paints that picture well is the fact that last year was the first time, I believe, in MLS history that 2-1 seeds from each conference met in the final. It's very rare to see the favorite or to see the team that was best throughout the course of the regular season make it all the way to the cup. And that mm-hmm. is just because of how wacky the postseason is and how it's structured here in American sports, but also just it so much, you know, has to do with chemistry, form, continuity, your injury status with your group. Like, there's so many factors at play. And Sporting Kansas City have all their guys available. You've got some players that are dealing with some knocks as well. That is to happen, of course, when it comes to a long season when players have to, you know, kind of battle through a lot. Players are always kind of dealing with a little bit of a nag here and there. But you've got a team that is largely healthy going into this final stretch, and that's playing really good soccer. And I think that in MLS playoffs is about as dangerous as you can be going into the postseason.
Absolutely. And that ties in well. You know, we just actually had Hannah Wing, reporter and host for the Texas Rangers, on the show right before you. And, you know, you look at the 4 best teams in baseball, the Braves, the Orioles, the Dodgers, the Rays, they all didn't advance. So, I mean, so true.
Right.
I mean, the postseason in every sport gets crazy. Anything can happen. But what I would say about watching Sporting the other night is that it seemed from start to finish, they were really in control. I mean, like you mentioned, momentum mm-hmm. and like vibes are so important in sports. And to me, it just felt like, of course, Sporting had a great crowd. Everybody was really excited for this regular season finale with so much on the line. But I mean, they came out really, really confident and really hot.
Yeah, they absolutely did. And Minnesota is a good team. The scoreline maybe wouldn't reflect that. And I don't think that the way in which they lined up tactically, especially in the first half, did them any favors. And credit to Sporting for taking advantage, right? Because you can have your opportunities in games. You can get the better of teams and outplay them. And that's maybe why some people don't like soccer, because they're like, a 0-0 scoreline, how am I supposed to know who's the better team in this situation? Well, that comes by taking advantage when teams give you or you're able to expose their weaknesses. And I think the way in which Minnesota in particular, you mentioned Johnny Russell's performance. Johnny Russell is one of the most dangerous wingers in Major League Soccer when he's able to get isolated one-on-one, cutting in, going to goal against a wingback. And a lot of teams have figured that out now. Like, hey, we got to make sure that one of our defensive midfielders is sliding over to help create a 2v1 situation to make it a little bit harder for him to cut inside. Minnesota didn't do that in the first half, and Johnny took advantage with that brilliant goal that he scored. You saw all the chances that they were creating. Minnesota put out two, not typical wing back players against two excellent wingers in Daniel Shallowy and Johnny Russell. So Sporting just full on took advantage of the situation. And I thought, from a game plan standpoint, they stuck to their guns. They stuck to what they did best. And then they took advantage, forced Minnesota to tweak some things in the second half. The Loons definitely made it interesting in the second half, but Sporting adding that third goal, I think, was crucial. To me, what's going to be the most important thing against San Jose, a team that has really excellent wingers as well. Christian Espinoza, one of the best wingers in all of Major League Soccer. And they're a team that has a lot of speed going to goal. And they're going to try to turn the ball over high up the field and hit you quickly on the counterattack. And so for Sporting, I think what is going to be most important is just to have full-blown concentration for 90 minutes. And it sounds simple, right? Like, being an athlete, of course, you have to be concentrated mm-hmm. when you go into a game. But if you look at some of the matches in which Sporting KC have dropped points this season, which at one point this year, they were right up there as one of the teams in Major League Soccer that had dropped the most points from a winning position this season. And when you drop points, that's the difference between getting a win and 3 points or getting a loss and 0 points or the difference from 3 points and only getting 1 point and a draw. So you don't want to be a team that gets ahead in a game and then is letting other teams back in. And Sporting has struggled with that this year. So that comes down to that concentration. And I thought that performance against Minnesota, this Sporting team was so locked in every single roll of the ball. Mm-hmm. They didn't give Minnesota's attack really any space to breathe whenever they got around goal. And it's that kind of suffocating defense that Sporting's going to need to bring into this game on Wednesday. Don't let the nerves dictate how you're performing out on the field, and especially on set pieces, which is how Minnesota scored their lone goal in that game. You cannot let those moments turn the game on its head. And Sporting have also kind of struggled at times with that set piece defending. So I think it's going to come down to that concentration, because we've seen this team hasn't really struggled much in recent weeks and months, even with the scoring goals. It's not letting other teams back into the game when you do get ahead. So for me, that's going to be the key in this game. And having a good crowd out there is going to be really important. But then also getting out to an early lead, which Sporting has done a good job of in games. They've been one of the best teams when it comes to scoring goals within the first 15 or 30 minutes of a match. That can do a lot in terms of how you're able to then manage the rest of the game, and also can create some frustration for the opposing team, especially in a one-off play-in game like this.
So, Allie, you actually just got out of the presser for the upcoming game here with the San Jose Earthquakes. What were the biggest takeaways after hearing some players and coaches talk that you think Sporting is focusing on right now?
Yeah, just that this team is ready. Like, they are buzzing at this opportunity that they have in front of them. And just hearing how Peter Vermees was talking and mostly Johnny Russell and Alan Pulido, you can just sense the excitement. I think when we look at Alan Pulido in particular, he's had a very, I would say, disappointing time at Sporting, not necessarily because of his on-field. When he's on the field and when he has been healthy, this team, the record will show it, his performances and his goals per game, like when you break it all down, this team is so much better when Alan Pulido is on the field. Mm-hmm. And that couldn't be more true, especially now going into a playoff situation. But because he's missed so much time with injury, he hasn't really gotten that. Hearing him talk about just how motivated and excited he and the group are for this game, it's really cool. And I'm happy for Alan, especially in this situation, because he has this postseason, he has, this big game experience. He's a player who you know, can shine when the lights are brightest. And so for him to now get this opportunity, I'm really thrilled for him. And he worked so hard coming back from his injury. I'd say the other thing, too, you know, with this group is that they've been kind of in a postseason mindset now for a few weeks. They've been in situations going into this final stretch of the season, of the regular season, where they needed to get points. They needed to win games. And while maybe they weren't necessarily must-win games, they were pretty dang close. And so I think when you have kind of already had to be in that win or die mindset, that's going to do you a lot of good because you're used to playing like that. You're used to like, hey, yeah, we've got to win this game, but we've also been thinking that way since September. And so I think that is going to be something that really benefits this team going into this not only play-in game, but if they advance out of this game, going into a best of three series against the St. Louis team that was the first team to clinch the playoff spot. I mean, they were the first team in the West to lock things up. They haven't really had to play with a ton of that must-win pressure at all this season. No one expected them to do anything as the expansion team, the new kids on the block this season, which, you know, playing that kind of free, like, hey, we're just playing with house money, that can be beneficial in ways. But I think now that they are the one seed, maybe they start to feel a little bit more of that pressure. And I think for Sporting, they've been used to playing with that pressure. Mm-hmm. And now they're not the favorites going into this thing. So embrace that underdog mentality and embrace the fact that, hey, we're playing really good soccer right now. It doesn't matter who we play, we're ready.
Yeah, a great point. I mean, the team with nothing to lose is the most dangerous team in almost every situation.
Yeah.
So, yeah, very true. You mentioned Alan Pulido. Of course, he's signed through 2026. And, you know, when we last talked, he was, I think, second in the Golden Boot race. He's now slipped just a little bit. I think he's sixth or seventh. But also, you know, you look at what he does for, you know, guys like Johnny Russell scoring those two goals the other night and Walter with one. Even when Pulido's having a relatively quiet game, of course, he's always kind of that, you know, that threat that allows other guys to open up, too.
Totally. I mean, yeah, you said it perfectly. And hey, he may not have been able to lock up the regular season Golden Boot, but who knows what will happen in the playoffs. I'm expecting a big performance from him. And it's credit to him because he did get, you know, really close in the regular season. And I think, you know, what you said is so important. Even though at times in games he may have a quiet game in terms of what's showing up on the score sheet,
mm-hmm.
what he provides is so vital because for Sporting Kansas City in this game against Minnesota, things were just working for them out on the wings. Like, they were dominating on the right and on the left flank. So when something's working for you, you lean into what's working. And then sometimes the wing play, going up and down the channels and creating chances that way, isn't necessarily going to work. And this team, I wouldn't say, is necessarily a, like, goal-scoring by committee team. They have their players who are their go-to goal scorers. But you don't have any big egos on this team that are putting themselves above the team outcome. And I think that's what's really important here is Alan Pulido, despite being, you know, the highest paid guy on the team, the striker, the one who, you know, is supposed to score all the goals, he's more than happy to share that spotlight with his teammates if it means that the team gets a win. And that is something that this organization has always prioritized when they go out and they sign players is we want guys who buy into that team mentality. And Alan Pulido does exactly that. But when he's not scoring the goals, he's still so important to this team because he's a player that you can't necessarily leave unmarked. And his movement and link-up play centrally, drifting from left to right or dropping back into the midfield, helps open so much more up for Sporting going forward. When they were missing him early in the season, this team didn't have that high-level central play that Alan Pulido brings, which then only just puts more burden on other players and makes it easier for opposing teams to know how to neutralize those threats. Now, when you look at the Sporting KC attack and you factor in not just Alan Pulido and Johnny Russell and Daniel Shalloway, but you also look at players like Remy Walter and you look at players like Eric Tommy and you look at even the wingbacks who like to get up and involved in the attack like Jake Davis and Logan and Denbe. It's hard to know who you should focus most of your energy on as a defender because any one of those players can hurt you. And so I think that is something that Alan Pulido really helps bring to the Sporting attack is, again, he can score the goals, but even if he's not scoring, his movement and his link-up play is vital to this team's success from an attacking standpoint. And since he's made his return, it has just really changed the fabric of this team offensively.
Absolutely. And Allie, we'll end here with this. Of course, sports people are very passionate about, and when things aren't going well, you know, it upsets fans. They like to feel like, you know, things are going well for the teams that they like to watch. So, you know, there were some angry fans this season, especially at the start. But I loved this quote from Peter Vermees after the win the other night. He said, "And for the naysayers, the doubters, no problem. Keep doing it because we'll keep fighting and clawing and making our way." I just love that because it goes to show that, you know, he's not listening to the outside noise. I think his team's probably the same way. And I mean, those are the guys that are together all the time, and they're the ones that are working towards this. So it seems like they have a great mindset.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Peter Vermees has been around this game for a long time. You know, he's played as a player in Major League Soccer and now has coached in Major League Soccer and has had a lot of success doing both. And I think if there's one thing that I know in just speaking with him over the years that he's taken from such, you know, a long tenure as both a player and a coach, it's that consistency is important. And when you talk to any of these players about the turnaround, right, you always want to pin it on one thing. Like, what was the difference? What was the one speech that turned this whole season around, or the one thing? And Johnny Russell has emphasized this a number of times, and so has Peter Vermees. We didn't really change anything. We stuck to what we do. The difference has been getting, you know, players back and healthy. You need your best players, especially in MLS and how rosters are set up. You need your best players. Teams who are missing the three highest paid DP guys usually don't have that much success. That's not just Sporting KC. That's any team across the league. But Sporting kept grinding. They stuck with it. And now you've got a team that has been battle tested and is brimming with confidence right now. And I think that's really important. And I also think too, you know, as a manager and as an organization, even when things go wrong, you have to still maintain that belief and that hope. If Peter Vermees one day after 10, you know, straight games without a win starts telling his guys he doesn't believe in them anymore, or he doesn't think that they've got a good team and tries to just, you know, call off the season 10 games in, they don't get to this position that they're in now. And that's where, you know, as a manager, you have to manage the good and the bad times. And that's just the part that fans don't always see. And that's not to say that some of the fan backlash wasn't warranted or isn't warranted. I think as fans, you know, it's important to, you'd rather have fans that are passionate and care than fans that are apathetic. And I think any team, any ownership group, any coach would tell you the same, even though it might not be ideal at times to have fan backlash. You'd rather have fans that care, right? And
for
this
sure.
is a Sporting KC organization that's used to winning. They haven't won a trophy since 2017, but hey, how cool would it be to see this team after how this season has gone, 10 years after their last MLS Cup, go back and do it all? Who knows? I'm not saying it'll happen, but I'm saying that this is a fired up Peter Vermees, who he saw the signs, he heard some of that, you know, doubt and disappointment and all those things at the beginning of the season. We might see him entering his villain era going into this postseason, and I think that's for a guy that competitive, that's a scary place for opposing teams, but they've got to get past San Jose on Wednesday, and from there, you know, anything can happen.
I love it. I love it. Well, thank you so much, Allie, as always, for your incredible insight, and we're excited for this big match with San Jose on Wednesday. Another sporting match, and I'm sure you're excited to be able to get there and call one more game. You're so busy flying all over the place with your work as well, CBS Sports, Galazzo Network, but you'll get to be back in Kansas City for one more.
I'm so excited. You know, it's funny. I told my bosses at CBS, I go, hey, I'm going to be unavailable this week. I told them this weeks ago because I'm like, I just knew Sporting was going to make the playoffs. And, you know, I'm obviously like calling all these games. So I'm so excited to be on the call for this one. Sports Radio 810 will have all of your coverage, even leading up to the game. We're going to have an exclusive pregame show that'll go at 8:30, or that'll go at 8 ahead of the 8:30 kickoff. I know Surin Petro is going to be out at the stadium for the program tomorrow, so it is a big day gearing up for this match, and 8:10 will be a huge part of it, so we're really excited.
Awesome. Well, always a pleasure, Allie. Thank you so much, and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Yes, hopefully after a big win tomorrow night.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Bethany.
That was Allie Trost-Martin, voice of Sporting Kansas City, as Sporting gets ready for a big MLS Cup wild card playoff game tomorrow night here in Kansas City. We'll be right back on She's on the Mic talking Big 12 football with Haley Lewis of Big 12 Weekly.
You're tuned in to She's on the Mic with Bethany Bowman on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back into She's on the Mic. Bethany Bowman here, your host, and joining us is Haley Lewis, host of Big 12 Weekly on ESPN+. Haley, thank you so much for joining us. Of course, college football, you know, into the swing of things. We're already now approaching week 9, so I'm sure there's a lot to talk about here. I know you just wrapped up your show. Thank you for joining us and giving us some insight once again.
Hey, anytime. Week 9. I can't believe we are here getting closer you know, to more of those bowl games kind of shaking out and seeing where we might predict people landing. And, of course, you know, the Big 12 championship, everyone's trying to make it to Arlington at the end of the – or end of December. And then we got the college football playoffs coming up. And we two teams in the Big 12 that potentially could be in those conversations. So it's exciting. We got exciting ball ahead of us and another good weekend behind us as well.
Absolutely. Oklahoma leading the Big 12 right now at 4-0 in the conference, 7-0 overall. Texas right behind them, 3-1 in Big 12 play. Iowa State then at 3-1, Oklahoma State at 3-1, and Kansas State at 3-1. Got a whole bunch of teams then at 2-2. You know, Oklahoma and Texas, like you said, kind of at the top right now. They're the teams that everybody else is kind of hoping will lose. But it's a pretty tight race, like you said, through the middle, and a lot of teams just trying to figure things out and maybe a way they can get back to the top and maybe find themselves in Arlington at the end of the season.
Yeah, there's still a lot to be seen in the Big 12 standings right now. And you mentioned it, the two top teams and the, you know, ranked, I think, what, 6 and 7 after the AP poll came out this week. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, but two top 10 teams are in the Big 12, and sadly, they'll be leaving next season, and four newcomers are add on to the four newcomers that are already here. But there's a lot of parity in the Big 12, and I think we saw that again after last weekend. And it's exciting, though, because it really could be anyone by the end of this. And after we saw two top-tier teams go down to the wire with what we might call some of the lower-tier teams with Houston and UCF, two of the newcomers, it was really interesting to show that maybe this could be anyone's when it comes down to it, but definitely Sooners having the biggest advantage, and Texas might be struggling with some injury. I'm sure we'll talk about that in a little bit. But it's exciting. There's exciting football to come, and I think it's really cool what we've been able to see shape out for the Big 12.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, you know, this past week, Oklahoma barely squeaks by Central Florida. And it's kind of weird because you look at, like, a game like KU played them, and they just kind of tore them up. They were able to run the ball very effectively against Central Florida. But that's kind of what makes the Big 12 Conference crazy, is that no two teams really match up exactly like the other. And it kind of creates some definitely just interesting matchups.
Yeah, I was talking to my co-host actually about that, and it was like we are reporting on different teams every single week. We can't even follow what these teams are doing because they look completely different from week to week. So seeing a little bit of consistency would be nice. I mean, it's been the quarterbacks as well, a lot of injuries this season and a lot of backup quarterbacks in, and then, you know, throw in the transfer portal and different things like that, and it seems like you're reporting on a different person every single season, and if not every single week. But yeah, that's what makes it exciting. You mentioned USC taking the Sooners down to the wire, a team that K-State was able to handle. And I think a big part of that was the fact that John Rhys Plumlee is back in, and he's still dealing with some of that lingering knee issues. But also, he was dealing with flu-like symptoms the entire game and was able to power through four and almost knock off the Sooners. So an impressive outing for UCF. They'll have another, you know, strong test ahead of them. But I definitely think that, you know, they have a lot of potential this season.
Yeah, so then Oklahoma actually comes to Lawrence to take on KU in a big noon kickoff, so that'll be exciting. I'm sure Jayhawk fans will fill the stadium and be out in full force for that. I am seeing reports, I think actually Lance Leipold told hosts today on 810 that Jason Bean will be the starter. It looks like Jalen Daniels is progressing, but isn't quite there yet. Just an interesting situation for sure, and it's definitely tough to see your preseason Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year not play much this season thus far.
Yeah, I know, that's tough. You know, it's been Jason Bean pretty much all season long, and that's how it was last year as well towards the end of the season, ever since he had that shoulder injury. And it's disappointing for the Jayhawks because the potential of what they can be with Daniels is so high, and you saw it when he even came in for a couple of quarters earlier this season. He is a phenomenal player. I mean, he came into with Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year with the preseason preseason honors coming out. So you know they have the faith in him and what he can do. It's just unfortunate for the Jayhawks that they haven't been able to have that. But they can make up the production. Jason Bean, although, you know, had a tough outing last time around with Oklahoma State, he can definitely step up for the Jayhawks, and they're able to get it done on the ground again. Devin Neal, phenomenal for them. They also have Highshaw. So the offensive weapons are there. It's can they do it yet again without Jalen Daniels, which has got to be disappointing for the Kansas program and fans after seeing all the hype going into this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad you mentioned that because Jason Bean has not been a bad quarterback by any means. I think
that gets
overlooked a little bit because people are hyped up about Jalen Daniels. But last season, Jason Bean threw 4 touchdown passes against OU in a 52-42 shootout that the Sooners come out on top. I think he'll have some confidence heading into this game.
Yeah, and I do too. I mean, KU has the ability to get it done. I think the Jayhawks, if they beat the Sooners, it'll be the first time they've done so since 1997, which would be quite a feat, especially taking down an undefeated team. But they lost 2 of their last 3, so that's also, you know, kind of probably riding on Kansas's shoulders going into this one a little bit. But you said it. They should have the confidence. They've shown that they can get it done without Daniels in there. And if everything is, you know, right and feeling good come Saturday, this is a big game for the Jayhawks, and you've seen that home crowd advantage too. They can definitely, I don't think that they've actually lost at home this season. So the Jayhawks have the ability to get it done. It's just, does it happen on Saturday? That's the biggest question.
For sure. And then looking at K-State, a huge win for them, 41-3 over TCU. K-State and Chris Klieman, they continue to use this 2-quarterback system of Will Howard and Avery Johnson. It seems to be working well. I did find it interesting that I guess in the postgame he was asked about it. Will it continue? And I think he said, I don't know. I don't think so. He was a little vague on that. But right now it seems to be definitely kind of their best ball that they're playing with these 2 quarterbacks.
Yeah, I mean, hey, I don't usually like 2 quarterbacks, and platooning that role for different teams is definitely proven to be a detriment a lot of times. But if it's working for them, let's do it. You know, keep rolling with what's working. And I'm sure by the end of the season and when they start getting toward postseason play, that's going to be something that they'll have figured out by then. But right now, if you can confuse an opposing team's defense and keep, you know, that very vague who you're going to have in at the starting quarterback position, then do so. It's working. Avery's able to get it done on the ground. We even saw him have a passing touchdown this past weekend. Will Howard is that senior veteran type of leadership who we've also seen play some exceptional football. So the thing that I love the most about K-State this past week was that they were able to kind of share the wealth. You saw how many offensive weapons that the Cats have. So this will be a hard one for them coming up against Houston because Houston's coming off a great game of nearly taking down Texas. So it's going to be a good matchup, but I'm taking the Cats and their 2 QB rotation. I love it. Confuse the defense. Don't put out there who it's going to be. And if the platooning the role works for you guys right now at this point in the season, why not?
Yeah, I would imagine it's pretty hard for defensive coordinators to plan for both of those guys because they do bring 2 really, you know, different elements to the table, and they're 2 guys that they can win with, like Chris Klieman has said. But as you mentioned, next matchup for the Cats, Houston, coming off of a great showing against number 7 Texas. They lost, you know, 31-24. Just not a team you can look over, and there's not any in the Big 12 that you can look over, but this will be a tough matchup, I think, for the Cats, even though they're coming off of probably their best game of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think I saw anything exceptional out of Houston in the beginning of the season, and then they have that Hail Mary pass against West Virginia 2 weekends ago and take the upset, and then this past weekend almost taking down 2 very controversial calls there at the end, almost taking down the Longhorns. So it's going to be a tough matchup, but I think the key here is that Kansas State has had 38 or more points in three of their last four outings. So they really are on fire mm-hmm. right now when it comes to terms of the offense. But Houston also has a very high-powering offense in the past 2 weeks. They had 392 total yards, I believe, last weekend. So that's 6 yards per play. They had 20 first downs. So they're obviously a team that can get it done as well. But K-State's defense, they looked good last weekend. Holding TCU to 300 yards, that's the lowest they've been held all season long. And I'm sure that felt great in another rematch of the Big 12 championship game. So another confidence booster for the Wildcats. So, Houston has momentum on their side, but so do the Cats. So I think that K-State will hopefully prevail in this one. I see them as the better team overall.
I think so, too. And then not to look too far ahead, but it's funny they'll actually get Texas then next after this Houston matchup. And Texas, Quinn Ewers right now, the quarterback, looks like they're going to be without him heading into this week. And so I'm not sure how long that's supposed to last. It's looking like a shoulder, an AC joint thing. Yeah. Any update or anything that you've heard on that, Haley?
The last that we heard today, and that was right before we went into the show, so I haven't checked Twitter quite yet, but on Tuesday around noon, they were still saying week to week. It is very unlikely. I don't think he's going to be playing this weekend, but it's his throwing shoulder, and I think this is the true test for the Longhorns. Are they who they live up to be without Ewers in as their quarterback? So can they get it done without him is going to be a huge test for that program and what they've been able to build over the past couple of years. So we'll have to find out and see, but I don't expect him to play this weekend, and we'll have to see if the Longhorns are everything that they were kind of hyped up to be preseason without potentially one of the best quarterbacks in the entire, nation in there with them.
Absolutely. And then it was really fun. I got to see you at a Big 12 basketball media days last week. Are you excited for the crossover season to start? It's about to get really busy.
Oh, yeah, girl, that's what I was saying. Again, I was talking with my co-host just earlier about it. I'm like, life is about to get real busy here. This is a fun time. I mean, although we love focusing just on football, it's so much fun, and there are four new teams that we get to learn about, and that was really cool at Media Day. And I'm sure, as you saw, there was a DJ. There was the red carpet was basically pulled out. Big 12 is changing things up this season, and it's really cool to see the hype that they're bringing along with it. So, Kansas is going to be a tough team in Big 12 hoops, and I'm definitely excited to see how that one pans out.
Okay, me too. Well, Haley, thank you so much again. Looking forward to the next time we'll have you on, because there's, like you said, a lot left to be seen in the Big 12 and a lot of football left. But, of course, we're excited for Week 9, and we'll catch up with you soon. Thank you again.
Absolutely. Appreciate you having me.
That was Haley Lewis of Big 12 Weekly getting us ready for Week 9 of college football. Thanks again also to Allie Trost-Martin of Sporting Kansas City and Hannah Wing of the Texas Rangers joining us tonight on She's on the Mic. Coming up next, a big NLCS Game 7 between the Diamondbacks and the Phillies. Who will be taking on the Texas Rangers in the World Series? Find out here tonight on Sports Radio 810 WHB.